This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people in industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And once again, super great to be with you as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science. Open innovation, nanotechnology, all sorts of different things. Today we have a very interesting guest, John Sinise. He's an industrial engineer and fire stop expert. He's going to be speaking at the IEEE Homeland Security Technologies Conference going on in Boston, Massachusetts, May 9th through 12th. We're covering the speakers and the exciting things that are going on at that particular conference. If you want to know more about that conference, you can find out at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a link, and you can clip on that link and find out all the things that are going on with the show. John Sinise is a industrial engineer and fire stop expert. His talk is going to be critical infrastructure protection for substations and transformers, which has been a burning issue of this program for a long time. Really worried about our infrastructure and our electrical grid and what's going to happen if the terrorists decide to turn their attention to it. So he is absolutely on the cutting edge and has a lot of fascinating things to tell us about. And we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we have on the set in the second half of the program, and of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. All right, we're going to go to the phones now and talk to John Sinise. He's an industrial engineer and fire stop expert and a principal with Ballistic Fire Barriers, LLC. Going to be speaking at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference that's going on in May. And the title is Critical Infrastructure Protection for Substations and Transformers, which has been an absolutely riveting subject on this program now for the past several years. So we're very, very happy to have John with us. Welcome to the program, John.
Hey, great, Colonel Mason. Thank you for having me.
Now, I understand you're going to be having a display at the conference, too, and we're going to want to talk about that a little later on so people know what they can see when they go to the conference and visit with you. But right now, let's start out with this critical infrastructure protection for substations and transformers. You've been an industrial engineer and fire stop expert for quite some time with a vast career over 30 years. And how did it migrate to this specialty?
Well, really, we try to respond to the voice of the client, and in this case, our client was really looking for some high-end mitigation protection and ballistics. Mm-hmm. And we've always had the expertise in fire and containment as our primary work. And it's really the industry and I guess the needs of what people are looking to do the right thing and protect infrastructure that's brought us here. So.
Yeah, it has been, as we say, quite a burning issue on this program for some time.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're so worried about it. A couple of years ago, of course, we covered the 19 minutes of the in California, the substation that fed the power to Silicon Valley, and these expert sharpshooters, unmolested, 19 minutes, taking out the transformers very surgically and then disappearing before the law ever got there. So we can understand this is a really, really critical need.
That's been a big motivator for many of the utilities that we see, that have focused off of that event and now built the ballistic protection into some of the critical infrastructure work that they do in planning. So a lot of that's coming off the drawing board now. I mean, that was 2.5 years ago. that really, you know, it takes time to really develop the ideas and move forward. And the industry has really taken that event very seriously and really built around that and built off of it. So
well, that, yeah,
we're seeing that now.
That's really something. And of course, all the substations are being encouraged right now to not only have a built-in protection from cyber warfare, but also the physical protection. And this is really a step up, because before you had guards, you know, with ID cards and a lot of them not really highly trained. So this is quite a thing. Explain about how this protection works.
Well, surely, you know, typically we've been, you know, deploying fire barriers for transformer separations and transformer protections for years through utilities that have, you know, small geography and transformers that need to be actually protected from one another. With that, there's some standards that we employ from NFPA and others to design what's called just a fire barrier. So those walls now have been looked at, and you know, recognizing that critical infrastructure is not only just fire barrier protection from within, but perhaps we could use these walls to protect from outside threat, and typically snipers. And so we looked at the walls and some of the configurations and decided to step up the rating on the wall, so to speak, and bring it a ballistics rating. So we worked with Underwriter Laboratories test standards, and looked at the levels of ballistics that are available, and came to the industry with some ideas on some of the levels that are available to protect, and actually looked at the Metcalf incident, which used armor-piercing rounds. And the level of protection now, and you know, not to throw a lot of numbers in, but a level 8, UL level 8, is the typical level of protection that we're deploying to protect critical infrastructure. And that is built right around that incident in Metcalf. So, and that comes from the industry and saying, look, here's what we need to do to mitigate a ballistic threat. And so now we've taken the fire barriers and actually reconfigured transformer separations and containment walls and protection to include a ballistics quotient. So it's really allows the utility to mitigate any projectile, not just ballistics or something maybe that even in a wind condition, flying debris. Transformers are very susceptible to damage. The radiators, the fluid that's in them, and the controls can really be damaged quickly and easily, and if a transformer is brought down, you could see what happened, as you mentioned before, Colonel Mason. So the teams that we deploy look at the standards, look at the substation, we look at the terrain, we look at the geography, and we look at the line of sight provision based on the geography and what we're looking to protect, and then we bring fire and ballistics protection to the engineers to discuss, and we come up with really what's been some great solutions.
Well, what's really fascinating is it's all precipitated by what went on in California a couple of years ago with these snipers, which was just absolutely what a wake up call that happened to be. And of course, we lose a power station, and a lot of us remember back in 2002 when a tree limb fell on a power line in Ohio and started a cascading power failure all over the Northeast and shut down power everywhere. So we could be incredibly vulnerable without this sort of protection. Go ahead.
Yes, and it goes well beyond that. I mean, as we speak to utilities around the country, they all have specific concerns, and even in urban areas, not just out in the woods. A stray bullet from a hunter, any type of projectile. So the grid is sensitive, and I think if anything, we just understand now more and more where the sensitive points are, and those are the ones that the industry is really trying to mitigate threats. And as you mentioned, the cyber threat has been really focused on, and the perimeter security threat and the proximity threat, which brings in the ballistics and the fire ratings, which is what we do.
Yeah, yeah, incredible. Friends of mine in the electric delivery business tell me that that Edison or Westinghouse could walk into an electrical distribution plant right at the moment and recognize all the equipment. So there hasn't
been a lot of
advances. But you were saying that this protection from armor-piercing bullets. And I suppose that would be grenade launchers and everything, if this is a big fire protection system, right?
Well, possibly. We design up to what's level 10. You know, I mentioned there's 10 UL levels of test that these barriers can be designed to. So, I mean, within, you can't design to protect against everything, unfortunately. But we do feel we can mitigate a lot of the sniper type and physical attack hazards with some of the things that we've been able to do. And again, it's not just all us. It's really us and a combination of the cyber guys and smart placement of the equipment by the utilities. Sometimes it's just, a combination of those that really, we don't want to wall everything up with barriers, but we do want to use ballistics and we do want to use the right type of protection where we need it. And those critical, typically we could talk to a utility that has a 1,000 substations or 500 substations, and they'll whittle that down and identify 15 or 20 that are really, really mission critical. And obviously that's where we want to focus some of the efforts. Go right to the proximity, right to the problem, but the potential of, a threat and build from there. So that's really where the industry is. It's a real exciting time in an odd way, even though we're protecting against the threat, for us being in the, life safety and business that we're in. This is really a time of taking things off the drawing board and putting them out in the field and really making them work.
So the soft targets, of course, being identified first. And
no doubt.
Yeah, and then, of course, as the threats become more sophisticated, all the targets are going to want to be identified and protected, because that's what happens. Terrorists move on when they see the soft target taken care of. They then get more sophisticated and go to another target. Now, a protection against a drone warfare, too? I mean, are we looking at saving our substations from bombs dropped from drones?
We have some configurations now that are, I can say, drone-proof, but, this is still a lot of development, but there's a lot that's we're deploying and looking at that is particularly in urban substations in cities, where there's buildings surrounding a transformer bank. Mm-hmm. Staggered barriers, ballistic shielding above is being provided and designed from overhead threat. And being able to shoot or drop something from a drone, we can now deploy and design ballistic shielding for that's either deployed when needed. So if the threat is identified, it can be deployable, or it can be stationary and just provide a fixed structural target, fixed structural protection to protect against an overhead threat. So we do have some drone capability, I guess, as you can call it, or drone protection. And of course, there's a lot built on that. We're working with the fiber optic guys and some of the sophisticated electronic guys. We're a smart wall, or our walls are attached to fencing and other things. But typically the ballistics, the fire rating, and the design, is a good team effort built on standards from UL and NFPA. And that's what makes it happen. And like I say, that drone protection is possible. So if you have those ideas out there and something you need to protect, let's talk about it, because we're speaking all around the country with different situations and just getting some real great input and design ideas and actually pricing work and that can provide that level of protection and mitigation.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. You can get these protections in place in pretty short order. We had a guest on the program a few weeks ago who's also speaking at the conference, and he pointed out that the drone warfare is something that you don't have time to pick up the phone and call for permission to protect yourself from the drone. You've got to be able to get it in place in a hurry. And you're saying here that on the spot and pretty quick notice, when a drone threat is anticipated or recognized, that there are protections that you're working on and getting in place that can protect against that. Is that what you're saying?
No doubt, you know, if it's cantilevered or deployable ballistic shields, or if it's, again, staggered, you know, these transformers need cooling. So, you know, there's a lot, you know, we're looking to protect the unit, but we want the units to still run and produce power and do all the good things that they do. So we can't impede the performance of the equipment. And that's why it's really important to work with the utility and the engineers. And some of the guys that have risen to the top are just fantastic. I mean, they've been doing transformer work for forever on the grid, some of the talent that's in this industry. And when these guys put their thinking caps on and they see what we can do with modularity, and our walls go to 61 feet tall, and we designed to 150 mile an hour wind load.
Wow.
So, yeah, these can be pretty big, and you know, some of them are protecting the infrastructure, you know, that can't be protected with a concrete wall, because you can't put that, you know, it's not fire rated, it's not ballistic rated. You can only go so high. And so we use pure foundations. We've got a lot of designs that have seismic capability as well, and that wind load's really important. You know, if you look down south now, 150 mile an hour wind load is probably the norm of what we're talking about, more than typical 110 a lot of times.
Yeah.
Years ago. So we have to be able to design to that, and we do, and we provide up to a 6 hour fire rating in some cases. So this is some pretty. Serious mitigation or serious protection, and that we're able to deploy. So you can imagine what could be done with that. I mean, walls that are, 30, 40 feet high, that are, a couple hundred feet long, are very achievable and designed for ballistics and wind load, and be able to stand up to most things that are probably going to come at it.
This is really, really comforting to many of us who take electricity supplies for granted. I mean, we turn the light switch on, the lights come on, we plug in our computers and our other appliances and things, and it's all just part of our daily lives. And we don't realize how critical it is until the electric goes out. One of the survivors from Hurricane Sandy made that great quote. He said, if you lose the internet, he said, you're back in 1979. But if you lose electricity, you're back in 1879.
It is so true. You know, it's funny because we speak with all the utilities, and we speak a lot with the water guys too, and the hazard, the waste disposal utilities are just as important, and then the fossil fuel guys and all the guys that are doing different things and that are involving energy or utility, let's say the gas companies, the rail yards have come and talked to us about areas when substations are next to rail yards that are identified as critical. But they all point back to the juice, to the electric. If the lights aren't on, it's the batteries in the flashlight only go so long, and so that's really important that they. We bring them into the equation every time because they really know the infrastructure. They know what they have, and they know where the hot buttons are. And it's been really interesting for us and for me professionally just to work with some of these guys on some of their ideas and some of the things that you don't realize that are in these communities that really power, millions of people, and one little... incident can really make a lot of headaches for can really be a lot of problems.
Well, you point that out. It isn't just the lights going off in the house, but it's also the lack of water, because there won't be any water pumps going. The lack of defense, because the police and the fire departments will be down. The lack of national defense, because our radar systems and everything else depend so much on electricity. So what you're doing is incredibly vital, and it's one of those things below the the surface of our consciousness that has to be in place to give us this feeling of well-being, that our power is not going to be interrupted. And you mentioned something before about, you know, at the same time, you've got to protect these power plants, but you also can't shut off their ventilation. And then the other challenges that you have is that if there's some reason, some emergency on the inside, you have to be able to get police and fire past these barriers and in to be able to take care of critical situations, catastrophes that can happen. And you even mentioned seismic. And I'm not sure that the people listening to the program noticed, because we kind of went over that in a hurry. But yeah, you've got a problem there too, don't you? Especially in places where seismic activity can be a real threat.
No doubt about it. And, you know, historically, it's always been big foundation walls, you know, if there's a need for a barrier. Mm-hmm. And so our design particularly goes into pier foundations.
Yeah.
And they're up to 16 foot on center. So you can really, you know, for the people listening that understand, you know, that you could take a 16 foot on center swath of the wall out very easily and drive a truck through it. You can, you know, put a new transformer in if you have to. Mm-hmm. One of the keys the industry needed, at least in ours, was modularity, and that's just not just for ballistics. That goes to fire barriers and transformer protection and some of the other areas that we're protecting. They all really need to be able to move. They need access. They need to maintain. They need to update. They need to penetrate these walls sometimes. So we do a lot. I'd mentioned we do a fire stopping, through these walls. So a lot of what we do on the specialty side requires a penetration seal, perhaps, that's rated as well. So this is some things that are out there. Each substation is different, you know, Kermes. And as we come up there, that's why it's so important to engage these guys even in a think tank approach. We've had an opportunity a couple times to bring a couple utilities together that have identified similar problems. And, it's great just to watch them kind of throw it out there and say, look, this is where our needs really are. And if we can come up with a solution, this could be something we could replicate on 10 or 15 substations and really make an impact and protect our infrastructure.
Yeah, well, this is more than just a barrier. This is really some intense engineering you're going through and covering all the aspects. I'm fascinated with it. We're going to get a chance to get to see it pretty close up hand. I understand you've got a pretty elaborate display that's going to be at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference. We can visit with you. We can see. What are some of the things that you're going to be showing there?
Yeah, hey, we'd love to have some fun with that. We're really looking to shake hands and doing our speaking gig up there as well. And want to, we've got a booth with a sample, some of the materials. The materials are pretty unique. They're pretty fun to touch and hold. As you'll see, the combinations of steel and concrete mesh and the way that we protect. There's a little sample wall, of course, and we'd love to say hello, show you some drawings, talk a little bit. And, share a business card would be great. So I really look forward to that.
All right. Well, during the course of your presentation then and speaking, you're going to be able to alert people that you've got a display and they can go over and visit with you after the speech is over with. Is that right?
No doubt about it. We'd be happy to entertain all questions and thoughts, you know, and hoping to invite a couple of friends as well to the whole event, so it should be really good.
Okay, we want to remind people who just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. We're covering the IEEE Homeland Security Technologies Conference at the Westin Hotel in Waltham, Massachusetts, and the people that are speaking there and making presentations. John Sinise has been our guest so far in this program. He is with Ballistics Fire Barriers, fascinating individual. The title of his speech, his presentation at the IEEE International Conference on Homeland Security is going to be critical infrastructure protection for substations and transformers, but he's a lot more than just that. And John has been such a fascinating subject this past half hour. I want to carry it over into the next segment. We've got a break here at the half hour, John, but there's some things that we may have missed. We didn't get in your contact information, how people can reach you, and your website. We want to talk about that and also the things that we may have missed. So we hope that you'll stick around for the next half hour, and we'll be back with the second half of The Promise of Tomorrow. Heard also online commercial free at promiseoftomorrow.biz all the time, worldwide. Okay, let's break. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers, will we meet today?